Fan.
Programming on the Fan today is brought to you by Cars for Kids. Segment we do here on the Common Man program. Handing me the play-by-play job, basically for any team, would be abject failure. I mean, can you imagine when I go Johnson over to Jones over to, I'm really bad with names. What's her name again? You kind of need to be familiar with the names and the numbers of the players on the roster, right? And can you, what you saw, I mean, I actually tease the listeners, you, I, and Rosen, when we were at that, the Goose that laid the golden egg 2.0, remember? It was last year during the Invisible Enemy, the pandemic. And they did the, it was some kind of like a, what did they label that thing? It was a practice amongst your own players. It was kind of a controlled scrimmage, I think is what they called it. And then we were broadcasting live from the play-by-play booth there. First time I'd ever been up there. And we started doing the play-by-play a little bit. Was it three plays in, I got bored? I couldn't do it. I couldn't bring my... I mean, look, I can do play-by-play. I've done it at a high level. Well, a high school level. I did high school play-by-play. Half second. But just the idea of having to ducky and bunny it up and get on planes, trains, and automobiles.
Well, I think you're being a little hard on yourself because I remember you once did an audition tape to be play-by-play of the Minnesota Twins.
I did.
And it was about the three best minutes of play-by-play I've ever heard in my life. Would you like to hear it?
Well, sure. I didn't know I did that.
It was a while ago. Okay. I think it was actually preceded me even being the producer here.
Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the inaugural Minnesota Twins game on the Fan Radio Network. I'm your new play-by-play host, Dan Cole, and it's the Minnesota Twins hosting the AL Eastern Division-leading New York Yankees. Let's take a look at the Twins defensively. At first base, it's Dougie, Louie over at second, Guzzi at short, Koski at third. That's Dougie, Louie, Guzzi, and Koski. In the outfield, left to right, Jonesy, Huntsie, and Morsey. That's Jonesy, Huntsie, and Morsey. Behind the plate, it's AJZ. And then, of course, Brad Radke on the hill.
And I doubted AJZ. I doubted him. And now they're here.
Leading off and playing second base for the New York Yankees, it's Alfonso Soriano. Here's the windup and the first pitch from Radke. Whoa, that's way high and outside. And that's not a very good sign to start this ball game. One ball, no strikes. Radke working quickly into his delivery. That's down in the dirt. What a terrible pitch. And this is the guy they paid $30 million for. High, low. You think he might want to throw one over the middle. That's down low and again. Ball three. 3-0 now the count on the leadoff hitter, Alfonso Soriano. And I'd imagine he'd have the red light here with Radke throwing like that. What do you want to guess? This one will be high and inside. High and inside. Ball four. And so Alfonso Soriano trots on down to first base.
Well, at least
so
he
not a very
first
good start
run.
For Twins ace, Brad Radke. Oh, he's good, isn't he? Batting second now for the New York Yankees, all-star shortstop, Derek Jeter. Radke looks in. He gets the sign from AJZ, the windup and the pitch. Oh, it's a long fly ball into center field. Huntsie comes in. Now he's going back, 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 back. It's over his head, you idiot. What kind of gold glove outfielder are you? Here comes Soriano. He's rounding third. He'll score easily and into third base with a stand-up triple as Derek Jeter, and the Yankees lead the Twins 1-0. Boy, oh boy. Boy, this is getting off to a good start. What do you think of that? And now guess what? Jason Giambi. Oh, yeah. He's not going to have his way with Radke or anything, is he? Radke, again, off to one of his notoriously slow starts. Why don't they just have this guy come in the third inning and start somebody else? It's unbelievable. Oh, and don't forget, it's not whole day at Hunting Gals. The first 100 customers will get a free spatula, and she'll be wearing nothing but a watch. Here's the windup by Radke in the pitch. It's a long fly ball. Way, way back. Going, going. It's gone. It's a home run for Giambi. It's 3-0 Yankees. And this club thinks it's going to the World Series. It's a terrible team in a terrible city with terrible fans in a terrible stadium. And here comes Ron Gardenhire to the mound, so it looks like we'll have a pitching change. And don't forget, go to Jiffy Lube and get your oil change. It's $19.95 with your Twin Stub. We'll be back right after this break. The score, it's the Twins 0, the Yankees 3, and they're still batting that Metrodome.
That's not bad.
That's pretty good. Yeah,
and I could do even better than that. I mean, I was a little critical of the club. They don't like that at Bally Sports North. I don't think they'd like that over at Evil Neighbor either. I think they want a bit more positivity, but I call them as I see them.
Yeah.
And I see them that they're not very good. That's what I see.
I also have a Vikings audition tape in here as well.
Seriously?
Well, it's 6.5 minutes. It's a little lengthier.
I got to.
You want to give it a shot?
Well, let's give it a shot. We can always X-nay it after a while.
All right, here we go.
The Vikings hope to air it out in the Windy City in this Northern Division collision. Now, let's go live to Soldier Field in Chicago alongside former Viking Greg Coleman and former Coon Rapids Cardinals tight end defensive end Dan Cole. Here's the voice of the Vikings, Paul Allen.
Welcome to a lovely day at Soldier Field. This is Minnesota Vikings football. The Vikings take on the defending division champion Chicago Bears. Greg Coleman on the sidelines. Yours truly is Paul Allen. And our new analyst joins us here at Soldier Field. He is Dan Cole, the Common Man. This. Hello, Danny.
Thanks, Paul. It's a pleasure to be here. I feel so fortunate that my first season as the analyst for the Vikings, I believe, will be the first year that they win the Super Bowl. I think many Super Bowls to come. It's a very talented team. I don't see a weakness anywhere on the field. They have the best, youngest, fastest rising coach in the National Football League, and the ownership group of the Wilf brothers is the best in the business. I'm excited to be here.
Well, it's great to have you aboard, Danny. Let's talk about today's matchup. What do you think are the keys to victory for your Minnesota Vikings?
Well, Paul, as you know, I got the job because I have a great National Football League mind. I feel if the Vikings win the battle in the trenches, if they win the battle of the turnover and they don't make any mistakes, they will win the game. But most importantly, I feel if they score more points than the Bears, they will be victorious this afternoon.
Well, very well stated, that's Danny. And we're about set to kick off here at Soldier Field. Ryan Longwell is kicking right to left, hoping to get the Minnesota Vikings off to a great start today.
This was before Longwell got his tour card.
Longwell's kick incredibly short, and it's fielded by Rashid Davis at his 15 to the 20, and he's tackled at the 30-yard line. Ball came loose. Yes, Vikings ball. Let's play.
Well, Paul, what do you think of that? What a good luck charm the Common Man must be. My first play ever as Viking analyst, and we get the ball back from the Bears. You're right. Let's play. The Bears cannot give the Vikings this type of field advantage, or field position, that is, and expect to win this game today. I think the Vikings are going to win in a rout. This is a portent of things to come.
Johnson under center. He's back to pass. Rushed. Gets away from it. Dumps it right. Intercepted at the 32-yard line by Danielle Manning. To the far side. Bears ball.
That's unfortunate for the Vikes, but you really can't pin that one on Brad Johnson. I think the sun may have been in his eyes, and the wind is a crosswind, making it very difficult to throw the football, and he hasn't quite warmed up properly. Remember, they were expecting to get the ball after a long bear drive and touchdown. They had to jump on the field right away after the turnover. I don't blame Brad for that one at all. I think it's just unfortunate luck for our soon-to-be Super Bowl champion, Minnesota Vikings.
I like my delivery.
Bad punt. Hester will let it bounce at the 37. He'll pick it up at the 44, far side. Now he comes to the near side. He made a mistake, but he gets away from it.
What are you doing? Tackle him. Stop him.
Hester
get in the return line.
He can't get him.
And Devin
Hester.
Top Warner football. Stop him. Get him. What are you doing?
A 44-yard punt return touchdown.
I've never seen anything like this.
And
you call this a professional football team?
Devin Hester.
I've seen better tackling Coon Rapids Athletic Association when I was a fierce pass rushing run stopping a defensive end and a precise route running shooter and a pass-catching tight end. Whoa. Paulie, you see Ricky Manning over there? He's in a 63 toss power trap. I've watched the Bears on film do this before. You don't want to throw the ball in his direction. That 63 toss power trap is sort of the Bears' version of the cover two. Don't throw the ball to that side of the field. Don't throw it at Ricky Manning.
Johnson with Mewelde Moore behind him. Back to pass. Short drop. Fires. Intercepted. Ricky Manning Jr. 40. 30. Trying to run by Brad
Johnson.
Romo. He's got a touchdown.
Calling the play.
And,
and they thought Romo was the first to do that.
By Ricky Manning.
Oh, boy. Johnson, he can really read a defense. Can't he supposed to be this veteran, savvy, 15 years, seen it all, Super Bowl ring? And who's the offensive coordinator for this club? Can't he see the 63 toss power trap? It's obvious on the film I've watched. This team is in some big trouble already.
Minnesota's 2-4 on third down. No score. 3:50 to go in the first quarter. Johnson out of the shotgun.
Right into
flags.
The first quarter.
False start, Vikes. Penalty number 4.
False start. Offense.
Is this from last week?
5-yard penalty remains. Third down.
They're going to get Whittle in the middle.
Boy, that's a shock. Whittle again on an offsides. I mean, honestly, what is... We know what Troy Williamson had trouble with the vertical bar and that they need to change his face mask. For Whittle, he must need a hearing aid. The count is on 2, not on 1. It's hut 1, then hut 2. You go on 2. You don't go on 1. No, the snap count before the play starts.
Now, it's 3rd and 12 from Chicago.
This 35. Is refreshing, actually.
Two receivers left, one right. Mewelde Moore to the side of Brad Johnson
Moore.
Out of the shotgun. Takes the
bit
snap.
Went a little long. I get it.
Johnson zips it over the middle. Caught, but far shy of a first down. And it'll be 4th down from about the 42-yard line. It was Lance Briggs on the tackle. Gain of 4.
First of all, PA, in all due respect, no Brad Johnson throw is a zipped ball across the middle. He lobbed it across the middle. And, boy, that surprises you, doesn't it? You need 12. We get 4. Have you ever thought about throwing a 13, 14-yard pass on a 3rd and 12? I mean, again, it's elementary, my dear Watson. This is Pop Warner football strategy we're talking about.
It's 4th and inches for Chicago. Handoff Benson strings it out to the right. First down to the 20, 15, 10, touchdown.
Hold that Williams wall is something special. What a great run-stopping defense. Everybody in the stadium and their mother knows they're going to run the football on a 4th and inches, and you can't stop them. This analyst thing, I don't know. I've got better ways to spend my Sunday afternoon. I mean, I could plunge my head into a boiling hot vat of asphalt, or if I wanted to, I could watch paint dry,
or
one of my favorite pastimes, I could be the mid-tier man pyramid at Abu Ghraib prison. Have a good season.
I love that one.
The mid-tier of the man pyramid at Abu Ghraib.
So you didn't get the analyst job, huh?
No. I stepped on his touchdown call that one time. That was the problem.
Yeah.
Those were some good ideas. I don't know if they were well executed. That's when I used to do the things I used to do that made me good. That made me that fuzzy little cute little meat sauce guy in the fan. We haven't done anything like that in ages.
Haven't done anything wacky.
That's a lot of work. Think about the time and then think of all the time and effort you'd have to put into it. Here, could you do this wacky bit with me? A PA played along rather well, though. I think he did great. Yeah, he did a really good job. That was kind
Gerdsey was great as big voice guy in the open.
Yeah, I thought that was a lot of fun, so we were happy to help you with that. Do you think of the two-headed monster, remember, it's no longer the triangle of authority anymore, it's just two of them, it's Zim and Spielman. Do you think one is more to blame then the other one is directly involved with personnel. We all assume that Zim has some input.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think all of a sudden he's not there in the war room. He's not at the draft. He's not at the evaluation process. And they just tell him, here's your players. Knock yourself out. So he probably has input. The final word, though, remember we played that soundbite last year where Zim was kind of, I don't know if it's jokingly, but he wanted us to draft a certain player. And then we took the wide receiver instead, right? Jefferson, I think. So, you know, Spielman does have the final say on that. Do you think one is more to blame than the other, or do they go hand in hand?
I mean, I could give you pros and cons to both of them. You know, Spielman, he's been around a long time now.
Even before he was named general manager, yes, he was in that triangle of authority.
Yeah, that's back in the mid to late 2000s.
Yeah, yeah.
He's done enough to keep him around, right? I mean, he's had some hits on draft picks, obviously. But he's also had his share of misses.
Got to a few NFC championship games,
yeah.
Right? I mean, two of them when he's been around because he was here in 2009.
Yeah, I don't think he was officially the GM for that one. But
he was still part of the process.
Yes, he was part of it.
And then, we know the one where after the Miami Miracle, we went to Philadelphia. Well,
that's the thing is I think both of them are in a situation where it's not like Spielman's an awful GM and it's not like Zimmer's an awful head coach, right? To be here this long, you have to be somewhat competent at your job. I think Mike Zimmer is a good to great defensive coordinator. But there's also a difference between being a great defensive coordinator and being a great head coach. And I think over the years, he's never really been able to contribute anything to the offense. I think the fact that your offensive line has never made strides has to be somewhat on a head coach. And we've also had a revolving door, offensive coordinator and offensive coaches.
Yep.
Because you've had a defensive-minded head coach that gets a little hard-headed sometimes with some of his co-coaches.
Stefanski
left for a better job.
Right, but he was here and he was gone. I'm just listing the number of people that have had that job.
And even the other, Shermer went on to get a head coaching job somewhere else. But the lack of consistency on offense, specifically the offensive line, I think can be tied to, you have a defensive-minded head coach that just might not know that much about that side of the football. Or be able to coach guys up on that side of football like he can on defensively. He's great. So there's some strengths to Zimmer, and then there's some flaws. And you can say the same thing about Spielman. He's had some good draft picks. He's had some bad draft picks.
Had some good free agent signings. Some poor free agent signings.
So they've done well enough to never be considered terrible, and the team hasn't really bottomed out while the two have been here. They've always been somewhat competitive.
And when we broached the topic yesterday, I think you said you kind of think, if you give one the heave-ho, you give them both, they're kind of a Perkins combo platter.
At this point, they've been together for so long. I would think you would just want, if you're going to get a GM, that's usually the GM wants to get his guy.
Yes, that's true.
I don't want to be in a situation like we've seen elsewhere in this town for both the Timberwolves and the Twins where we're forcing the GM to stick with that coach.
Right.
And if you're going to let the coach go, at what point is like, Spielman has been what he is. He hasn't been an elite talent evaluator.
If you
and is a big reason the team has been in salary cap purgatory here for the last couple seasons.
I've got a couple of other questions I want to ask you, and I'll ask myself the questions as well regarding the Viking hierarchy, Spielman/Zimmer. We'll do that other side of the break. We call this the Common Man Program, right here on the Fan.
Whoa.
While it's possible a local team could be in the market for a new GM and a new coach, if you're in the market for new Anderson windows and doors, listen up. You can get started with your home improvement project and save money, too, with a great offer from Great Plains Windows and Doors. Right now, you'll enjoy savings of 15% on your entire purchase when you buy four or more windows or doors. And then when you mention KFAN, when you schedule your in-home appointment, you'll receive an additional 5% off, and you'll receive another no money down, no payments, and no interest for 12 months. Visit GreatPlainsWindows.com today. That's Great Plains Windows.
FAN. Yeah.
Hey, come see us 3 hours before every home Vikings kickoff or pregame on the Plaza presented by Shields. Each week, stop by our booth and use the hashtag KFAN Bikes for your shot to be Rube of the Game and win a $100 gift card thanks to Shields.
Touch me, babe. Can't you see that I am not afraid?
was that promise that you made? Why won't you tell me what she said? What was that promise that you made? Now I'm gonna love you till the heavens stop the rain. I'm gonna love you till the stars fall from the sky for you and I. Come on, come on, come on, come on, now touch me, babe.
I get so caught up in the tunes that it's difficult for me to regain my focus. Jim Morrison and the Doors, they're in my top five of rock bands of all time. In my top five. That's, think about that. When you're in the top five of the host of the co-host of Rock Talk's list, in the winter of KFAN Rock and Roll Jet, I finished dead last in that. But, you know, to finish dead last to Greg Swedberg and Fresh Charlie, there's nothing to be ashamed of.
It's pretty good company.
Yeah, don't need to hang my hat there. Yesterday we were talking about Garrett Bradbury. This week we were talking about the woeful shortcomings and inadequacies of the Vikings offensive line. We've discussed it for a long time now. And I remember when they drafted Garrett Bradbury to be center. He took over because our previous draft pick we used on a center, that was again Easton?
Nick Easton?
Nick Easton. That didn't work out. He's still in the league somewhere, isn't he?
I know he went to New Orleans after the Vikings. I have no idea where he is now.
So that didn't work out, so we needed to draft another center. And in trying to evaluate his progress or lack thereof, I tried to offer up an excuse for him, a little excuse computer. I said, well, you know, sometimes when you're the center, you got to help out if you got a bad left guard or a bad right guard or both. And yesterday, I think it was, Gesling or Kramer, I think it was Kramer for the Fish Rep Factory did a, upon further review, a film review. And basically, it showed that Bradbury was having the trouble. He's the one that needs the help. He's getting pushed around. And so, tend to be what I did. Apparently, he might not have the size to play in the middle because, let's face it, the defensive lineman...
Are you thinking of Pat Elfline for the center? Elfline,
that's what I was thinking of. And he's still in the league, right? I think. Maybe not. But wasn't he our center, and then that didn't work out, so then we had to
draft. He moved to guard, yeah.
Yeah. But I decided to look back on...
He's a guard for the Panthers.
Okay. I decided to look back on the scouting report for Garrett Bradbury. Danaby. I went to my favorite website for that. That would be Bleacher Report. This is what they said back on April 25th, 2019. April 25th, 2019. Strengths, agile, smooth mover when asked to get to the second level or pull. I was described as a smooth mover about closing time at a bar. On the radio, Romeo, and I have no switch. Excellent fit for a zone-blocking scheme thanks to his lateral mobility. The lateral mobility was tested when the coach at the combine held the football straight out, and then you're running in place like this, and then he points it to the left, and then Garrett would run to the left, and then Garrett would go to the right, and then Garrett would go to the left, and Garrett would go backwards and went forward, and we said, he's got good lateral mobility. We need to draft him. Experience starting at both left guard and center makes him a possible fit at multiple spots across the offensive line. Multiple spots. Football IQ is very good. He knows his X's and O's tend to be his P's and Q's, dots his I's, crosses his T's, and his X, Y, Z's. Will recognize blitzes and stunts and rarely gets fooled. He won't be fooled again. In other words, he's different than George W. Rarely is fooled by the defensive line movement, defensive line's movement pre or post snap. He can't fool me. Matter of fact, there were times in college where he would just go like this and shake his head and go, you can't fool me. I saw that coming a mile away. Here's some other strengths, Tenneby. Quick hands allow him to snap, then shoot his arms to control a heads-up defensive tackle. Strength in his arms and hands allow him to control blockers well while driving his quick feet. I noticed that in the 22 wide. I know you did as well.
I'd never thought about it before. Is there an analytic out there for snap speed? Right, because the quicker you can get back to the quarterback, the quicker the quarterback can get back into the pocket and start.
Ask Marty Wexler III. He would know.
Yeah.
Has recovery quickness thanks to loose hips and light feet. He had loose hips. I had loose lips. I sunk a lot of ships. That was weaknesses. Here it is, Tenneby. Doesn't have great size or lower body strength. May be seen as a zone scheme only fit at center. Can become robotic in his pass sets and must learn to be more creative when countering blocks. NFL strengths could be a problem when facing nose tackles or one technique defenders with better bulk than those he saw in the ACC.
Mm-hmm.
Overall play power could be better, especially his lower body. And finally, and this is the one that they should have noticed right away, has a very sweaty buttocks. That was another weakness that, and it wasn't discovered until later, right? Wasn't he the guy that had sweaty buttocks?
Yes.
That wasn't discovered until later. You're not doing your due diligence on a guy when you don't know he's got a sweaty butt. And you should be able to see that watching the 22 wide. He's got a soaking wet butt. So it says right here, Tenneby, just not big enough to stop the nose tackles, and he is getting pushed around.
Yes.
That is the problem.
Well, and it's another great example of, let's face it, they drafted this guy because Gary Kubiak was their offensive coach, offensive coordinator, and he was an offensive consultant, and they wanted the zone blocking scheme offensive lineman.
Right.
And back to last segment, when you're Mike Zimmer, he hasn't been able to have an offensive coordinator stay for 5-6 years. Right? For a long period of time. It's one guy in, one guy out, one guy in, one guy out.
Norv walked off the job.
So, given you're in that situation, you can't be drafting players just strictly off of a certain offensive system because that guy is going to be gone in a year or two. And that's what happened with Garrett Bradbury. Instead of just taking the best possible offensive lineman, they picked the best one that was for Gary's scheme. And then you get against some bigger defensive lineman and you can't handle it.
Because
they wanted the guys that could move out and get into space. And
if you were a Zygmunt Wolf, well, you'd be wealthy for sure. And you would also have run through dozens of steel-belted radials going around the Twin Cities over and over again. If, like, they go, like, you know, they're going to be the underdog in Arizona. Well, let's say they lose, drop to 0-2. Week three, it's...
That's Seattle? We have Seattle or Cleveland? Home to Seattle. Which we'll have tickets for those on Friday.
But let's say for argument's sake, because Seattle, I think that's a high-octane team, Tenneby. Let's say they lose at home to Seattle.
Yeah.
Now you're 0-3. And then game four, is that Cleveland?
Home to Cleveland.
And let's say you lose to Cleveland.
Yeah.
You start 0-4 and lose back-to-back home games. If you are Zygmunt Wolf, and remember, if you were, you would be a billionaire and you would have gone through dozens and dozens of steel-belted radials. Would you make a change like then, or do you wait till the season plays out? Do you say, what's the sense? It's that nobody's going to come in as a GM interim or interim coach and turn this thing around right now, as Van Halen once sang. Or would you say, would you pull a Ben Lieber and say, I don't like this, and I'm changing now? What would you do?
Well, if you had someone on the staff that you had considered a potential head coach candidate someday that you want to give a little trial run to, sure, I would consider, but I don't think that guy's on the staff.
Yeah.
I think you're going to go outside of the staff, whoever the next head coach is, if you go that route. So at that point, at 0-4, I'd still say, well, coach out the string a little bit. You know, 0-4, let's face it, your chances of getting to the playoffs are slim to none, but there is still 13 games left in the season.
Right.
Like there's, and they're going to be playing the Detroit Lions week 5. Like, you have a pretty good chance to get to 1-4.
Wait a minute.
I think the Lions are going to beat the Green Bay Packers on Monday Night Football, and they'll be leading the NFC North after week 2.
The year of the count.
Stafford back. Goff back to pass. It just doesn't have the ring to it, does it?
Jared. Throws to Quintez.
Jared to Quintez Cephas. I thought his last name, when I was texting to Deuce, I thought his last name was Bo Cephas. Remember I brought up Hank Williams Jr.? That was his nickname, Bo Cephas. I thought, so I texted to Deuce, Bo Cephas with a touchdown pass, and Deuce is going, who's Bo Cephas?
Jared, play action to DeAndre. Has Quintez open.
Okay, how about this? I want to ask you this. I'm going to give you, how long is the next break? 5, 6, 8, 10, 25 minutes? After the break, I'm going to give you however long the break is to decide who you would hire as your head coach, knowing.
Oh, boy.
Now again, I get it. There might be a guy right now that's a head coach that's going to be fired, and you take him in a moment's notice. But I'm talking about just what's out there with coordinators and this and that and the other thing. Let's see if you can pick a name. Maybe
I got one right now.
Well, let's do it on the other side of the break. It's the Common Man Program with Common and Tana B right here on the Fan.
And the Fan.
There's never been a good song with in it. Never. Except for this one. But I think this is the only song that ever had in it, right? So it only makes sense that this would be the best song with It would also be the worst with it, just depending upon your taste in music.
They don't write them like this anymore.
No, they really don't. How did you know that line was coming? Remember when Lester A. Wiltfong Jr. put his list together? He got from some clearinghouse of odds. Who's going to get fired first?
Yeah, it was
first,
a betting site.
Nagy and Zimmer and Reich and McCarthy in that order. You said that he had something called T-Formation. And I thought, what a great name. Probably be more appropriate for me if it was called I-Formation. Thank you.
I always love that
one. You always talk about, what was that one email? You always talk about yourself. You have C plus D. C minus D plus material. Where did he find the C minus material?
I have a football. You can call it I formation information.
I formation information.
If you want the best football knowledge, it's the Common Man Dan Cole.
Yeah, I mean that's what I would recommend, but that's just me. I already know who you're going to say. I know the coach you want to hire.
Oh, yeah.
Eric Bieniemy.
Going with the cliche answer.
You want Eric Bieniemy, right?
Well, I'm not going to act like I know like the next hotshot offensive coordinator that's in the league or defensive coordinator. But when you brought that up, that was the name that came to my head. It's a guy who's been an offensive coordinator for a very successful offense. Now, I get it. It's a little easier to be a good coach when you've got Pat Mahomes and you got Tyreek Hill and you got Travis Kelce. But there appears to be some creativity in the offense and some fun and some entertainment. And he's paid his dues. He's got ties to the Vikings because he was a coach here before.
Who's the defensive coordinator for San Francisco? Is he still their defensive coordinator or did he finally get hired as head coach?
He's the head coach for the Jets.
That's right.
Saleh.
Okay, he got that job. Okay. I'm going to throw a name out at you. This is out of left field.
Yeah.
B.J. Fleck. Do you think his name will be considered? Because wasn't it considered for a pro job? Didn't we hear that rumor last year?
Yeah,
wasn't his name
which...
tied to a pro team last year?
Well, and then I was listening to the Power Trip this morning when they said that there's a betting site out there that has him as the favorite to get to land the USC job.
Yes, I saw that same piece on my handheld computer, which doubles as a communication device. Well, let me ask you this.
Yeah.
How are you on trying to lure the... It's happening.
I don't know if the running down the field thing is going to work with professionals,
yeah,
though.
Yeah, it's probably not. Do you think the row of the boat will, too? Or do you think they're just... Instead of rowing the boat, they'll roll the boat. They'll just roll the rise. How are you on... You know, the Raiders went out... The Raiders went out and got Johnny Gruden. What are you about getting... Like, if you could convince Jimmy Johnson to come out of retirement, you like the idea?
Or Bill Cowher.
Or Bill Cowher, one of those guys. You like those? I mean, would you go that route? Billy Parcells?
They're both, Parcells, Hall of Fame coaches.
Yeah.
Great during their time. I just think the game has changed a lot. Now, Gruden I wouldn't say he's had success, but they had a nice game the other night, and he's, you know, he's got a decent enough offensive mind. I wouldn't commit 10 years and the amount they paid him. I can tell you that.
$100 million or something crazy like
that. But, you know, a guy like Jimmy Johnson, the game is so much different than it was in the early 90s when he was coaching. So can you make that adjustment with the sabermetrics and the analytics and game theory, and not to mention the athletes you're coaching are different in terms of how you can run them in practice, and you might have to be a little more sensitive with them now. You ain't doing the two-a-days. I don't know. I mean, there's a reason they've all been on the sidelines for a
while. Have you ever, what do you think about this idea? This is now, again, this is because I take the esoteric approach in everything. Co-head coaches. Like, you hire Eric Bieniemy, but the co-head coach is Phil Jackson strictly for calling timeouts, because who's the greatest timeout taker in the history of the NBA? And how critical can timeouts be in the National Football League? And I'm sure Phil's a bright enough guy. He could transfer that knowledge of when to take a timeout in basketball and when to do it in the NFL. What do you think of that?
Well, I think you might actually be onto something with the co-coaching thing, right? Like, how many times do you have a hotshot offensive coordinator? You got a hotshot defensive coordinator. Why not have them both be co-head coaches? Pay them both
handsomely,
where it's more, a lot more than they'd be getting just being an offensive coordinator somewhere. Then you have a guy who should be elite at one side of the ball, a guy who should be elite at the other side of the ball. You know, let's face it, with Zimmer, how much is he even talking to the offense? This last week was the first time he's ever done tape, watched tape with Kirk Cousins.
Can you hit, you got to be kidding me, because I don't know where that is.
So at that point, all you need is a head coach for calling timeouts and challenges, and really, who's ever coaching at the time, if you're the offensive coordinator, you could be, you know, the defensive guy could be the responsible for timeouts while the offense is on the field. Or challenges while the offensive guy, he can focus on the plays, and the defensive guy does that, and vice versa.
And if you do come at a place where you have a disagreement and can't come to terms with it, flip a coin. They do it in the NFL all the time. Do a coin flip, right? Heads, defensive coordinator wins, tails, the other one does. That's the other part. You know, we always talk about drafting a quarterback can either, it can be a, it's a franchise changing decision, good or bad, right? If you select the right one, like the Chiefs have. And again, we can talk about how once he gets out of his rookie deal, it might be a lot more difficult. As a matter of fact, you know, in thinking about, you know, Mahomes, he's going to catch Brady and surpass him. Is he really? Because when he gets out of that rookie contract, didn't he already sign the big deal?
Yes.
So how much does he make?
Mahomes?
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
So how is it?
Wasn't that like a $450, $500 million type contract?
How is that going to work now, trying to put other pieces around him? Because we had those numbers. Remember, someone provided us the numbers where most quarterbacks, when they win the big game, they do it in the rookie deal, because once they get paid the big bucks, then suddenly there's not enough money to go around to fill the other place.
Well, I think what Kansas City was hoping, because they signed him to like a 10-year deal,
right?
That early on in that contract, yes, he's going to be getting paid a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But if you get to years 5 and 6 and the salary cap in the NFL, who knows how much farther north that's gotten 5, 6 years from now, because they print money, that the salary cap might be in a situation 5 years from now where you're getting a pretty, I don't want to say good deal, but you're getting a decent deal for Pat Mahomes where you can work around that, and they've got him locked in.
But regardless of the money, and if you have to win it during your rookie season or wait till you get out, if you can still win other championships. Because remember, with Brady, people say, what about Brady? That's the exception. Well, no, because Brady's accepted a lot less because his gal made so much. And Big Ben's won two, and I'm sure one of those was outside of his rookie deal. I would think it would be. I don't know.
I think the first one, he was a rookie.
Yeah.
They might have both been in his rookie year.
But that quarterback decision, we've talked about this before. One of my theories is it can set your franchise on a meteoric rise like it did for Mahomes, or it can set you back almost a decade. Because look, you drafted Ponder. You needed 3 years to see if he was the guy. He wasn't. So that's 3 years you were spinning your wheels and maybe even were going in reverse. Then you draft your next guy. What if he's the next Ponder? Now that's another 3 years. That's 6 years, over a half decade where you've spun your wheels. So and the same thing could be said, I think, for a coach. Look what the Lions have done. The Lions have had a multitude of coaches. And most of them were considered good, smart football people. As a matter of fact, the previous coach, Matt Patricia, I think he had a chance to be a terrific coach, but he just didn't have the look of one with that beard and that pencil in his ear. I think that was his biggest problem. Was had he shaved the beard and put a ballpoint pen behind his ear, the roar would have been restored, but it wasn't. But do you get what I'm saying about the coach, too? Now, this next guy, he seems like, you thought Matt Patricia was off his rocker? This Dan Campbell guy seems like he's got all sorts of issues. Now, it might end up working out. I don't know. But what if Dan Campbell's a wrong and high? You said, so that quarterback coaching situation, Kevin, you can draft the wrong middle linebacker, and guess what? Go grab another one. Sign one in free agency. But that quarterback coaching thing can set your team back. So I already saw a piece where, is the Buffalo quarterback Josh Allen? There was a headline after week one, Josh Allen's overpaid. Now, are they reacting to that?
You've got to be kidding me.
That's clickbait, right? Because, you know, it's like, well, they lost week one. That'll happen. He also led him to the AFC Championship game, and he could be overpaid. Well, every quarterback's overpaid, but he might be the wrong guy. I don't know. But I guess Miami, I don't know enough of the names, personally. That's why I asked you, because I think you're a bit more familiar.
It is amazing how people's perceptions of players change once they get paid, right? If you're in Buffalo, you just absolutely love Josh Allen. I'm not saying they don't. But the second he starts making big-time money, you're expecting elite Pro Bowl performances every year. I've actually been wondering how Wild fans are going to treat Kirill Kaprizov moving forward, right? Because he was elite last year. Let's say he signs a five-year, $9 million deal after holding out and maybe angering the fan base to a certain extent.
Right.
You know, you start going through a 8-game slide where you're not scoring goals, all of a sudden people are going to start attacking you, whereas when you're not making as much, people lay off you. We've seen it with Kirk Cousins.
Yep.
I think most people would say Kirk Cousins is an okay quarterback. But when you're making that money, the same thing happened to Joe Mauer once he signed the big deal. All of a sudden the rage comes your way when you can't play that Sunday after, you know, a day game after a night game.
If Cousins was making the NFL minimum, we'd be going, what a bargain.
Sure.
Boy, this is like a bargain.
We can add all this around him, yeah.
He's got a few warts. He's got some issues, but man, for this kind of money, this is really a bargain. We got a really good quarter. And then when you look at the money, you go, we're paying him that kind of money. And then people get bitter, and you can't expect the guy to turn the money down either.
Same thing with like Anthony Barr. Now, Anthony Barr's been hurt, but he gets like a lot of criticism in this town. Anthony Barr is a good player.
Right.
But when you throw in the contract, tie it in with, well, you can't stay healthy, then people are very down on him. But when he's on the field, I like him.
Indeed.
I always goes back to Nick Punto when he was with the Twins. He was a utility player. Yep. I loved him as a utility player.
Correct.
Right? He had a little bit of pop in his bat. Not power, but you know he could hit a little bit. He could play all positions. There was one year they went from utility player to you're our full-time third baseman.
Yep.
And well, he couldn't produce like a third full-time. And people were mad at him when it was really management putting him in a position where he couldn't succeed.
I'll give you another Twins player that I loved and hated dependent upon what he was doing. I loved Mike Redmond when he's fully clothed. I did not like Mike Redmond when he's totally naked. So, another example of where you like a guy in one stage of undress and the other you don't. You know, it's six of one and it's half dozen of the other. We mentioned it earlier.
You haven't been messing with your kidney at all today, by the way.
You mean my
gallbladder or whatever.
My hernia was better today. It's weird because yesterday, again, while playing golf, I was pushing it in every other swing. Which means I was pushing it in 43 times. I had 86. No! Not much better today either. After my best round of the year. No, I haven't been pushing it in. I'm glad you noticed. I haven't been pushing in my hernia quite as much. I don't know what that means. I don't think it's just going away. I've done enough research. They don't just go away. I see my doctor tomorrow for my annual physical to try to save money on my health benefits, you know, my pay. Because I forgot to do it before, and I got the email from IR that said, you can still do it. So I'm going there, and I'm also going to ask him about my hernia. And I'm going to see if I can take, like, a Super Bowl. I thought about this. I'll put a Super Bowl in my navel, and then I'm going to get an ace bandage and wrap it around really tight and see if that helps my hernia. I'll see what he says to that. Oh, man, time flies when you're having fun. Well, I wish right now I was going to prep for my Gopher women's basketball.
Yeah, that'd be nice.
But that's not me. I'm not going to get that job. Thanks for having me.
Hey, great job.
You as well. We're back tomorrow at the 12 noon. Stick around. Big Ticket JG. They are next right here on The Fan. Thanks for your support.
Well done, young man. And good night, folks. And good night, Mrs. Calabash. Wherever you are.
Cam Dantzler, what are you doing?
Listen back to any of Common Man's programs by podcasting on the iHeartRadio app or KFAN.com.